greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
We sure do. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. Do you know that you have an action figure? There is a Zorn action figure.
There is. I like one. You know, I'm a little bit of that song saying the greatest father that ever was born.
Yeah.
The greatest, maybe not.
Top 10.
Among the greatest.
We can change the lyrics if you'd like.
No,
Bill can re-sing it.
It's okay. It's okay.
You're all right with that?
Yeah, we'll have it.
Let's talk about the weekend. We talked about it a little bit at the top of the show. Donald Trump inaugurated on Friday, so this was his first weekend as president of the United States. Do you think it went according to plan?
According to plan? I haven't heard that asked quite that way. I think it was awful. I mean, I think his first 2 days were really, really bad. I thought that the speech itself was way too dark. It was a campaign speech. It wasn't an inaugural speech. It wasn't one of those ones where, you know, campaign speeches inaugural speeches are moments in history where you sort of take a look back, you look forward, you talk about this great country of ours, and you talk about your determination to make things better. This was about, you know, rusted out factories and kids who weren't learning anything and crime everywhere.
Not enough border patrol.
This American carnage, which Ira Glass said he's going to steal for his radio show. So, but I mean, it was way too dark. He was insulting the people who were on the dais behind him, basically saying, you guys are all crooks taking money. And now the people are running this country. And it was what his hardcore supporters wanted to hear, but it wasn't what the better than 50% of the voters and an incredible percentage of the population who were worried about him wanted to hear. It's like, well, this guy has no experience, no political experience. He's a liar. He's a narcissist. Is he going to pivot and become presidential? And the answer was no. Then, of course,
you don't think that was a presidential speech? Because I do.
No. Oh, you do?
I do.
What kind of president? Because a third world president speech?
No, but hearing what he was saying, who wouldn't agree with that? To make the country great, but I don't like the great again. Let's make it better. That would have been...
Yeah, it was not... It was like it's midnight in America, basically. It wasn't a morning in America speech. Reagan was able to deliver that kind of stuff, and I'm not a big Reagan fan, but Reagan was able to deliver that kind of stuff with a smile, with optimism. This was not an optimistic
speech. I guess you're right.
He was like saying, I'm going to fix... And he was making all kinds of crazy promises. I'm going to eradicate ISIS. I'm going to... You know, this American carnage stops right here, right now.
But he's been saying those two things particular since day one.
Yeah, and the thing is, when you're... The difference between politicking and governing is very important. You know, in politicking, you make these promises. You say, oh, things are going to get great. And then when you start to govern, you've got to manage expectations. The public, you know, his supporters now think he's going to do all this, you know, all these incredible things right off the bat. And just this morning, he said we're not going to be involved in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the trade deal.
Mm-hmm.
And they're signaling that they're going to renegotiate NAFTA, the 90s trade deal.
Country by country. But even the way he addressed NAFTA over the weekend was a weird kind of a taunting way of, have you heard of NAFTA? Like that, like the way he throws it out, like it's a crazy
he's
word.
He's snarky. Or that's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, kind of childish. And then, of course, on Saturday, he goes to the CIA and stands in front of this memorial wall. And instead of, you know, making it about the CIA and about, he makes it about how many times he's been on the cover of Time magazine and how smart he is. And then he gets into this spat with the media about how big the crowd was at his inauguration. A couple hours later, he sends his new press secretary out for his first meeting with the White House press corps, and the guy just lied. I mean, you know, we talked about, oh, well, they weren't accurate. These were lies. He told four or five provable lies.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't spin. It wasn't, you know, they said, talked about alternative facts. These were lies. I mean, he said, you know, the TV ratings he talked about, the metro ridership in Washington, D.C., these were all lies.
I asked this of Steve Bertrand earlier. Should the president of the United States pay that much attention to how many people were at the inauguration? Should it bother him that much to the point where he sends out a press secretary to say, oh, no, there were a lot of people there. The press is lying to you about this.
The first time he goes out, the guy goes and talks to the media. This is like an opening bid. This begins the relationship between Donald Trump and the White House press corps officially begins it, and they started off on probably the worst note that I've ever seen. And I, you know, this guy Sean Spicer, I asked Kevin if he'd pull some clips, because Spicer was interviewed by David Axelrod not too long ago, and he was very emphatic about the importance of telling the truth. And can we play those?
I just
love to hear those. Yeah.
Here's another question. Will Trump's staffers lie for him? Does Sean Spicer remember saying this 3 weeks ago?
The one thing that whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, you have your integrity. I may tell a reporter I can't comment on something or, I'm not able to discuss that, but I've never lied. And I don't think, and I don't intend, I would argue that anybody who's an aspiring communicator adhere to that. Because if you lose the respect and trust of the press corps, you got nothing.
To be fair to Sean Spicer, he said that prior to this weekend. So to be fair, at that point, he had lied, but since then he has.
I mean, was there one more clip too? Yeah, let's play the other one too.
You've got nothing, he says. So does Spicer have anything? Has he squandered all of the goodwill he's built up over the years? Or is it a chance to repair this relationship? Can he win back his credibility? This is all about credibility, after all.
He will be speaking at 12:30, and we will be running that here on WGN Radio.
That'll be interesting. Yeah, that was Brian Stelter, the CNN host, who was paraphrasing and asking the questions about him. And the issue is, when you have to tell, you have to be fact based. And when he comes out and says that, that Trump's inaugural crowds were bigger. The biggest ever, this is the biggest ever, period, and so on. I mean, that's what they call gaslighting, where you're telling somebody something that's completely not true, and you're telling them over and over again, and to try to make them believe something
Kim
that
Jong-un
is not true.
Is the patron saint of this.
It's like, yes, and Donald Trump went out to the golf course and shot 13 holes in one. I mean,
right.
It is North Korean level lying. And again, people say, well, Obama lied about Obamacare. Yeah, he did. And I called him out on it at the time. And every politician spins and shades the truth and says they don't know something when they do know something. I mean, there are all kinds of ways that they do this. But this is an entirely different
all right,
level.
Let me draw out a scene for you. First of all, it should be a non-issue. The amount of people who showed up to the inauguration should not be a debate. If you're the president of the United States, you shouldn't care. People show up. That's all you need to know. All right. So either President Trump or an intermediary comes to Sean Spicer and says it's very important to Donald that we get this message out that he had the largest crowd and everything like that, even though it's not true. This is the message that they want to convey to the American public. If you're Sean Spicer on day one or day two, depending on if you consider Friday a day, do you say, yeah, no, we're not going to address that. We're going to get right to the meat of issues. We're not going to even talk about this. It's not important.
You like to think that he would.
You
really like to think that someone would have that kind of integrity, and especially someone in his position where, he's a big shot in Washington. He's not going to go hungry if he stands up and says, I'm not going to say this. And my guess is that Trump would not have pushed him if he had pushed back, because Trump knows that it would have been a pretty lousy thing for his press spokesman to quit on day one.
Right.
That would be,
Trump would have pushed back. Trump wanted that out there.
I would have said, if you want to say that, send somebody else out there, or you go out there and say it yourself, which he already had said it. He had said the same thing at the CIA briefing. I mean, I thought it was really infamous of Spicer. They're calling him Baghdad Sean now.
I know.
Sending him out there to lie on Trump's behalf. That was a terrible thing for Trump to do. It was a terrible thing for Spicer to do, because he's got to. It is all about communicating the White House message and transmitting it to the public through the White House press corps.
Yeah.
If the White House press corps doesn't trust you to say whether it's sunny or raining out, whether it's night or day, then that really gets in the way of your message. And Trump talked about, well, I'm at war with the media. He is picking a lot of these fights with the media. A lot of those people in the White House press corps, they're just there to do their jobs. They're there to assemble information and present it and send it out on the wires and put it in their magazines and newspapers. And they're not necessarily out to dig dirt on Trump. The people who Trump's got to worry about media-wise are people who are not in that White House press room. They're the people who are out there, like David Fahrenthold of the Washington Post, who's been digging into his business dealings and his charitable dealings.
Yeah. All right, let's pick it up right there, because there's other questions to be asked about just that. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. It's Bill and Wendy along with Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune on WGN.
How bizarre, Bill.
How bizarre is right. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Eric Zorn is joining us from the Chicago Tribune, as he does every Monday, to talk about whatever is going on in the world. And this week in particular, it's the first weekend of the presidency of Donald Trump, so we're focusing mainly on that. We're at 312-981-7200 if you have a question or a comment.
Shall we take a phone call?
Yeah.
Which one you want, Bill?
Oh, it's up to you, whichever.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
Hi. I have to really differ with you, Wendy, about your comments about Friday's speech. It was not one iota presidential. He had the platform of the world standing there in front of him, and he went back into narcissism and negativity, and how President Obama and Vice President Biden sat there with their heads held high was amazing, just amazing. He just could not say one nice thing. It was an election speech, like trying to get elected. It wasn't a presidential speech, not at all.
And in your opinion, I thought he sounded presidential because that's the best I'm going to expect from Donald Trump. He stuck to the script. He stuck to the prompter. He did not go off. I don't know. I feel like I can't go against what he was saying. We all want this country to be better. How it's going to happen, I don't know. And it did get dark, that I will admit. It was not hopeful.
I thought he got very dark, and even his body language walking out with the thumbs up, it was just like, come on, this is a very solemn oath you're taking right now. This is not one of your campaign stops. And he's going to have to learn how to handle that because he is not handling it the right way at all.
Mary's right.
We want it to be better. We want it to be, we want there to be peace between Democrats and Republicans right now. Oh, my God. I think he just forged backwards again. And then Saturday and the Spicer, who needs to get a suit that fits him. Oh, my God. Spicer just really messed it up. And that guy was put under pressure to talk. But
I find it shocking that he didn't say no as press secretary. I don't want to say that stuff. Maybe he did. I don't know that we know that.
He just failed. He failed his first test.
But he did.
He did, and Trump did. Mary's exactly right about Trump's speech that, it needed to be more inclusive, more unifying, and it needed to be less.
But he's not like that. I didn't expect it to be more unifying.
I know he's not like that, and that's
and it's great that he had a platform to do it, but.
The day after the election, he was actually a nice man. He was nice. He said, we're going to change up Obamacare. That's what he said that day. And we're going to make, we'll talk about the wall. He was a little bit like, oh, my God, this has been the worst election. We got to just unify. And he gave a glimmer of hope, but it's all gone again. And I don't know if you had the opportunity to watch Meet the Press yesterday. Oh. That Kellyanne Conway pretty much threatened Chuck Todd. If you're not going to listen to us and get along with us, we're going to stop having interviews with you. Oh, okay.
Kellyanne. I don't think they're going to miss much if they don't talk to Kellyanne Conway. Frankly, I mean, she's a slick. And disingenuous a spokesman as I've ever seen. She's very good at what she does.
Accusing Chuck Todd of being overly dramatic as he was recounting the weekend. And she said, you're being overly dramatic. And that's when she pulled out her alternative truths line, which I think will live on in infamy for decades and decades.
But she did threaten him. Don't you remember that?
She said I'll have to reevaluate our relationship or something like that. Yes.
It's 48 hours since you got into office. Please don't do this to us, And that's why I did attend the rally on Saturday. It was the most overwhelming, wonderful day ever. It was beautiful weather. Everybody got along. There were people holding Trump flags on Jackson. Nobody booed him. It was like the most delightful, upbeat day since, really, Obama got elected the first time.
Excellent. Mary, we appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
And that's it. If we have differing views, we should be able to discuss it. Anna, you have a differing view than our last caller.
I do. I heard Mary say that, it wasn't a presidential speech and so on and so on. They were embarrassed. It was a speech that spoke the truth about what's going on in the country now. And, that's probably why Hillary lost, because she didn't tell the truth. Probably why Trump won, no matter what he does say things are off the wall at times, but he spoke to people the truth. There is a lot of stuff happening in this country, and sugarcoating it or making a speech, you know, when he was, you know, inaugurated and so on, that is going to make everything look peachy and clean, you know, wonderful, is I don't think that's what people know better now. They know it's not a good thing happening in the country. Everything he said is happening, is the truth, and, you know, we want to see somebody come in and clean it up the best they can.
Eric is closing his eyes listening to you talk.
Well,
I don't know how he's going to clean it up.
First of all, he exaggerates the problems in the country. I mean, he made the country sound like a hellscape, you know, basically. And I don't think that it is. I mean, we've had 80 straight months of job growth in this country. Unemployment is as low as it's been in many, many years. Stock market is about to break 20,000. I mean, it's not like the country is falling apart. And he made it sound this terrible place. You know, the reason that a lot of factories are closing is jobs are going away. Is technology is replacing jobs, automation is replacing jobs, and they are going overseas. It's true, but you know, on balance, trade with other countries is good for the country. So he's got all these simplistic ideas. He's overstating the problems. He's overpromising. And it wasn't an optimistic speech. No one should say, oh, everything's great, we're all happy. Everyone should say, like, we have problems. Every inauguration speech that I've read says, you know, we have problems, we're facing these issues, but we can do this together. We're all together, Republicans and Democrats. And there was very little nod to that. Mostly it was about him and what he said he was going to do and how horrible things are in this country. And I just think that was the wrong approach.
Anna, you have 20 seconds.
You know, I love this country. I wouldn't go anywhere else. And you know, I'm not crazy about Trump and, you know, a lot of the things he says. But I didn't understand any of this stuff when it comes to, you know, economy, whatever. But as far as crime, I mean, that's what got to me. It is bad. You can't say, and I live in Chicago, in the Chicago area, you cannot say that things are not bad as far as crime.
But I don't believe that Donald Trump is the one to fix that. I mean, do you?
No, I mean, he can't fix it alone, but maybe put in some sort of plan where, you know, the police, everybody else, you know, together, works together on fixing it. I mean, it's got to get fixed at some point. Otherwise, it's going to spiral even more out of control. And who wants to live in a city like that?
Well, thank you for your call, Anna. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Fix it.
Does it? Yeah, please. If we can fix it, fix it.
That's what I mean. How can you disagree with what he's saying? We have problems with gangs and everything, and it's like, we're going to fix it. It sounds good. That's what I'm saying. The speech hit home with people who believe he's going to do it. I'm just skeptical as to how he's going to do everything he has promised
everyone. Well,
that's
of course me. And on Friday's paper, I presented a whole list of statistics. Mm-hmm. Just and basically, it was just starting line. This is where we are right now. This is where the unemployment rate is. This is where the gas prices are. This is where, you know, drug abuse is. All these, I put as many numbers as I could, updated them as much as I could. You know, the abortion rate, also, and see where it goes. And
right.
if all these numbers improve, then you know, I guess we can start worrying about size of inaugural crowds
right.
for the second time around.
That's fine. That's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.
Good
we'll check
you.
In with Steve and find out what he has on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.